Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin.
And I'm Sarah.
And today on the pod, we're going to be talking about the elections that happened on Tuesday. And we have a great interview with the senior legal analyst of Rewire News, Imani Gandhi.
Yes, it's going to be a great show. First, we had that blue fucking tidal wave that happened on Tuesday. And then, of course, I'm really looking forward to you sitting down and chatting with Imani because she's one of my favorite Twitter follows. You might recognize her as @angryblacklady on Twitter. She's awesome. She's someone that we've been wanting to have on the podcast for a while.
Yeah, she's been on the dream list since like the beginning.
I know. And she also has a new podcast of her own called Boom Lawyered.
Which title alone, like
title
10
alone.
Out of 10.
Yeah, amazing. That's what I told her. I was like, it's a great title. But anyway, lots of good news to talk about, which is like shocking.
When we were planning this episode, I was like, let's just take a fucking victory lap. And it was like, wait, we're going to have a positive podcast, an entire episode?
That's almost all positive.
It's almost all positive? What?
I know. It's bananas. And it's especially wild thinking about where we were almost exactly a year ago today.
Yeah, I mean, I know.
I feel like so much has happened, but I feel like, you know, we would be remiss to not do a little bit of reflecting on November 8th, 2016 and sort of how we felt, you know, what our mindsets were. So, Devin, why don't you take us back and sort of talk through what the last year has been like for you?
Well, first of all, this time last year, I was definitely drinking. like at 9 a.m. Like,
oh, yeah. Definitely.
You know, and I was just real. I mean, I was so upset. And I was so upset at myself because I knew that I didn't do enough.
What do you mean by that? You felt like you could have volunteered more? You could have been more involved?
More involved, more aware. I kind of took that Hillary would win for granted. Mm-hmm. And I just assumed that, you know, other people were taking care of it. You know, the bystander effect. Mm-hmm. And, basically I was part of the system that benefited me. And so I wasn't really that interested in it.
Yeah.
And I was really mad at myself. And and then, you know, as legend has it, I called you to get brunch.
You were like, bitch, we need to do a podcast. And I was like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if you've said this before on the podcast. Maybe early listeners remember, but I initially was skeptical about doing a podcast. I didn't want to do it because I was like, this feels very cliche. But then Devin convinced me, and I'm so glad she did.
Yeah, by convince, I just mean like I kept telling her that we're going to do a podcast.
Devin is a very persuasive person.
Yeah. Like, I literally like wrote up a plan, like an outline for it, and I sent it to her, and she was like, God damn it.
It's like, you're right. Damn it.
Damn it, we'll do it. So, yeah, so this past year has been sort of a roller coaster. You know, it was awful, and I'm angry, and I'm still angry. And I remember going to Thanksgiving with my in-laws this time last year, right after the election. I was just not okay.
Yeah.
You know, but then it's the sort of seeing everyone come together and everyone start to get involved and to see the women in my life become like the fiercest bitch selves.
Yes.
Has just been so amazing. I mean, obviously I'd trade all of this for a Hillary presidency, but
yeah,
you know, without this, I mean, we wouldn't be doing this podcast. I don't know that I'd be this involved because I would continue to take things for granted. So
yeah,
if there's one very small sliver of a silver lining, I want it to be that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, what about you, Sarah? How's this past year been for you?
I have been fucking angry. I've just been drunk on rage this whole year. But
fuck wine. I have rage.
I know. Exactly. Exactly. November 8th, 2016 was, I just felt so much fear and despair and anger. Yeah. And, you know, it was remarkable to wake up on November 8th, 2017 and feel this sort of renewed sense of hope and optimism and determination and this feeling that, you know, people are stepping the fuck up and they're turning, you know, sort of this energy and activism into electoral victories. And that is really encouraging. I mean, I think, you know, we're going to get into it. It doesn't mean that we can't, it's not like we elected Democrats and then our job is done, right?
Right.
Like, we have to keep working and we have to hold these new elected officials accountable to the values that we hold so dear. But it was remarkable to see what a difference a year has made. But definitely, I felt a fundamental shift within me on November 8th, 2016, after Hillary lost. I just was like, there's no time to be polite to men anymore.
Right.
Like, it wasn't even like, and listen, I mean, we're white women. So, you know, 53% of white women who voted for Trump, like, we got to collect our own a little too, obviously.
Yeah.
But it wasn't even like really an intentional thing. I just was like, there's too much work to be done. I'm too fucking angry to hold men in my life. I'm too angry to hold their hands. Like, they got to figure it out. So I've just noticed this like fundamental shift and, you know, underlying determination that has continued through the year, and I think is going to continue for the years to come. And actually, there is an article in Jezebel that was written around late December that has stuck with me. It's called Becoming Ugly. And it sort of speaks to this feeling that I've been feeling. And I keep coming back to it because it's great. So I just want to read a little excerpt from it. So the writer says, quote, "Women, though not always good, have always been nice. And look where it's gotten us. Stripped of our rights, degraded, and still under the thumb of men. At no point in history has humanity as a whole been nice. So why should I? There's no longer a place for pleasantness, not publicly anyway. Now is a time for fury and force, a time for guarding the few things we do have, our perseverance, our bodies, each other, because they're so at risk and so, so precious." And that really sort of encapsulates how I've been feeling, which is like, I don't have time to be nice anymore. And society, you know, does its damnedest to keep women, quote unquote, nice in order to keep us in our place. And there's a lot of really interesting articles about female anger that have come out, and Rebecca Traister's writing a book on it. And I think there's definitely something to be said that certain women have more allowance to be angry than other women. Certainly white women, you know, were given a little bit more leeway to be angrier than women of color, for example. So I think that there's some nuances there. But I think that overall, you know, women are just not backing down. And we saw that in the Virginia's delegates races. Yeah. And it's really, really exciting to see Democratic women step up to the plate and get shit done.
Yeah. And it's also really exciting to see, you know, women turning that anger into action.
Yeah.
And being able to wield it. And yeah, it's wonderful.
All right, Devin, so let's get into some listener feedback and updates. So what do we have today?
Well, so this is probably my favorite piece of feedback ever. And I know I say that every time, but this is actually my favorite. one of our listeners, T, tweeted, "Thank you for discussing taxes. It sure is dry, but I love having a better grasp. Makes me feel empowered even in my marriage."
Yeah.
And I love that. I mean, taxes are a bitch, both doing them and talking about them.
I have to
reforming
say,
I'm
really not looking forward to doing my taxes this year because they're going to be so complicated.
I know. So, you know, but knowing what's going on, like, is what makes democracy chug forward, right? Like, having all the information. So,
yeah,
we actually had to cut about 10 minutes off of that discussion. We went through a lot of the, like, you know, background and tax policy that did not relate to like women and families, which is what we chose to focus on. But I put that up on our Patreon because I thought it was a really good discussion that we had.
Yeah.
So if you would like to hear that and like, you know, sort of get a more in-depth analysis of some of the like background tax policy, that's on our Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/hellbentpodcast. We just have like a quick update. We just want to say thank you for all your support recently. You know, especially in light of this blue fucking tidal wave. I mean, yes. Obviously, like, we're all coming together and our community has really grown and we're honored to be part of it. And then, of course, all of our patrons who support us on Patreon and by using or trying the products and our ads. I mean, it really goes a long way to keep Hellbent running. And we're just so, so grateful. Sarah, I cannot keep up with all of this Russia bullshit.
I know. Your whiteboard must be overflowing by now.
It is bananas. But I am able to keep up with at least some of the latest shenanigans with the Texture app. So Texture is an app that gives you unlimited access to over 200 premium magazines. And right now, Hellions can try the Texture app for free.
Devin, what does your magazine rotation look like on Texture?
Well, I'm on that New Yorker and Atlantic grind pretty hard.
Oh, yeah. The New Yorker especially, I feel like, has had some really good shit on Russia.
Yeah, the New Yorker actually published that article that I referenced in at least six different show notes about, it's called Cold War 2.0, and it's about how information is the new weapon in the Russia-United States situation.
But wasn't that article from a while back?
Yeah, I think it was published in March. But with Texture, you have access to your favorite magazines and their back issues anytime, anywhere.
Oh, nice. So to start your Texture free trial, go to texture.com/hellbent. If you choose to continue, Hellions will get Texture for just $9.99 a month. That's over 30% off their listed price.
And there are also great gift options available for the holiday season, which I love because it's digital and I don't have to wrap it.
Yes. So go to texture.com/hellbent to start your free trial today. That's texture.com/hellbent. All right, Devin, so let's get into our main news block, which, like we said, we get to talk about, like, pretty much good things, which I will say on the evening of Tuesday, I was, like, overwhelmed by the amount of good news that was coming out. Like, I just could not emotionally handle it because things have been so terrible. Like, it was wonderful, but, like, and just surprised. It was surprising in the most wonderful ways is what I'm trying to say. So why don't we... So the big one, obviously, was the Virginia governor's race and sort of the down ticket elections there as well. But why don't you go through all the stuff we want to highlight? Because there were elections across the country. And yeah, I mean, it really was a blue fucking tidal wave.
It really was. It, like you said, in like the most pleasantly surprising way I could have imagined.
Yeah.
I remember I went to a Katy Perry concert on Tuesday.
Wait, I did not know that. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Long story, but I went to a Katy Perry concert. And so I was getting ready. Like, I was like putting on makeup to go, and I had the news on. And when they called Ralph Northam for Virginia governor, I literally like screamed and did a happy dance.
In full Katy Perry getup.
Yeah. Yeah. In full Katy Perry getup. And my husband was like, "What? What? What?" And I was like, Ralph Northam won! Blah, 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 blah. Like air horns. That was supposed to be an air horn.
Bah, bah,
yeah, exactly. So as I just alluded to, Ralph Northam won the Virginia governor's race.
And they called it pretty early. Like, I thought it was going to be a nail biter, and it turned out to be a pretty emphatic win, and it got called early. And especially when you're on the West Coast, you get to like really party all night, you know?
Seriously. Yeah, that's us.
Yes.
Partying all night. I mean, I did go to a Katy Perry concert.
Yes.
So never mind. Lieutenant Governor is now Justin Fairfax, and he is the second Black person to hold statewide office in Virginia's history.
Yeah.
That was definitely like a great moment. Mark Herring was reelected as the Virginia Attorney General, which is great.
Yeah, so it was a full Democratic defeat.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, it wasn't a Democratic defeat, but they defeated the opposition. That's what I mean.
Exactly. Right.
I was trying to make that an alliteration, and it just came out wrong.
Great there. The New Jersey governor's race. So Phil Murphy, the Democrat, won there as well.
Chris Christie, apparently, so his approval ratings are like 14-15% or something.
I was
like
literally going to say 4%. So,
it's,
you know,
it's in the shitter. I mean, it's from what I understand, it's quite possibly the worst in sort of like the modern polling age. Like, he's the most hated governor like since polls.
Bread, y'all.
Yeah, exactly. Since polls, you know, have tracked these things apparently. So it's like, get the fuck out of here, Chris Christie.
So that was a great win as well. Very satisfying. And then sort of the big news here is that the Virginia House of Delegates. So,
well, before you get into the Virginia House of Delegates, sorry, not to interrupt you, but
yeah, go for it.
the New York City mayor's race. Bill de Blasio won re-election pretty emphatically as well. So,
yes.
I mean, people were pretty much like, get the fuck out of here, Republicans.
Just go away. Like, just fuck off. Go to your room.
Yeah, go to your rooms.
Yeah, so that's all great. And then, so yeah, the sort of like story, a big story here is the Virginia House of Delegates.
Yes.
They flipped 15 seats. 15 seats.
It was amazing. I mean, I think people thought that there would be some flips.
Yeah.
But I don't think people expected Democrats to really come in so strongly.
Like come in swinging.
There's a few races that are so close that they're being, they're up for recount.
The total of 5 races have a margin around that 1% threshold. So they'll likely go to recount. But still, 15 seats.
I know. Well, it's
that is
wild.
So many seats.
Because so all 100 seats were up for election this year. And coming into Tuesday, the split was 66 seats for Republicans and 34 for Democrats. So, I mean, the gap was incredibly wide. And Democrats are flipped at least 15 seats. It's actually bananas. It's amazing. I think what's really interesting is that there were a lot of challengers for Republican seats where Republicans in years past just went uncontested. They went unchallenged, and a lot of the seats that got flipped were flipped by women. Rachel Maddow put out a graphic showing sort of like outgoing and incoming House of Delegates folks, and it was like a lot of fucking white men getting out of there and a lot of young people, especially women, replacing them. Like, we will replace you.
Yeah, I really hope that Paul Ryan is shaking in his goddamn boots. I really hope so.
It's really interesting because the Virginia governor's race, Gillespie, who was the Republican candidate, I mean, we kind of talked about him, or you and Julie talked about him a little bit in your interview last week. Coming into being the Republican nominee for governor, he was a pretty like run-of-the-mill sort of quote-unquote Republican establishment dude. Like, he was a lobbyist. He like apparently worked at the Bush administration. Like,
I think Julie put it best. She was like, he is the embodiment of the swamp.
Of this quote-unquote swamp. Yeah, but then he took a very hard right turn.
And embraced Trumpism.
Embraced the sort of outright dog whistling slash wolf howls of Trumpism. It's interesting because, you know, the sort of Steve Bannons of the world are trying to frame it as, well, he didn't embrace Trump enough, and that's why he lost. So that's sort of like the spin that they're putting on it. It's
right.
Interesting. It's an interesting theory. I mean, I do wonder if Gillespie had gone even more hard right, if he would have been able to turn out more people. But I think really what happened is that the Democratic base was just fired the fuck up, and it just overpowered any sort of, you know, electoral potential that Gillespie had, I think, in this sort of purple state.
You know, a lot of it too, as Julie and I talked about this, is there were so many, like you said, Democrats running for seats they had never run before that, or had run in a long time.
Yeah.
That there was a lot of like down ticket excitement.
Right.
So, you know, that up turnout, you know, and I think it's interesting because all of the like dirty politic, you know, like tactics that were used were kind of rejected wholesale by the voters. So I don't know if he had gone harder on that. I don't know that it would have necessarily made a difference because people obviously did not respond to that. You know, and Julie and I kind of talked about how this is going to be a blueprint for Republicans moving forward. So, you know, if Trumpism didn't win here, or, you know, at least wasn't helpful, you know, maybe that'll turn the tides a little bit. I don't know. I'm so optimistic today. I don't even know.
Yeah, I mean, it's one state, right? And so, like, the dynamics of Virginia, you know, are different than the dynamics of other states. But
sure.
Yeah, I mean, Ralph Northam had he won by what, 8 points?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a huge margin.
Yeah, it was a huge margin, certainly bigger than people had expected.
And Julie alluded to this, kind of saying it's pretty split in terms of politics. So it's sort of an interesting look at how, you know, more national races could be run. Totally. I thought that was really interesting.
I mean, everyone says that Virginia is kind of a bellwether.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, you can't replicate Virginia across every other state, obviously, but it's an interesting sort of test case.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the people who won in the Virginia House of Delegates, because there is a whole slate of badass people, badass women specifically.
And first. Who won.
And
a lot
first.
Of firsts. A lot of firsts. And across the country, too.
Let's talk about first Danica Rome. She became the state's first openly transgender lawmaker. The Republican incumbent she beat was a lawmaker who drafted the bathroom bill to stop transgender people from using the bathroom corresponding to their gender. It's interesting because he called himself Virginia's, quote, chief homophobe. Danica Rome winning this was really, I think, a powerful message by voters.
It's weird, too, because I'm like, if you want to, like, that's not even, like, the correct terminology. Like, you should say, like, chief transphobe. You know what I mean? But he is very anti-LGBT, just sort of more broadly.
Right.
And, you know, with Danica Rome, he was especially heinous because he refused to debate her.
And he misgendered her
purposely
in mailers.
Misgendered her. Yeah. And it's
people are trash.
Yeah. I mean, Republicans like this guy are trash, but like he served in that seat for a long time and she came in and fucking whooped him.
Yeah. He was a 13 term incumbent. Do you know how often 13 term incumbents get kicked out of office? Not often.
And she was really, really, really focused on the local issues. Like transportation
right.
was a big one for her. And she, you know, from what I understand, like was just a weekend warrior and, you know, canvassed her heart out for herself. And she had a great group of people working for her. So that was, there was a great photo that the Washington Post took because Joe Biden
yeah.
had endorsed her. And so there's a photo of her sort of like slumped on the ground, crying sort of tears of joy after Joe Biden had called her to congratulate her. And it was like, I don't know, just that victory alone just made me so happy.
It felt good.
It felt really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she also is an expert shade thrower, apparently.
Oh,
did
my
not
gosh.
Know this about her.
Oh, my gosh.
Until now, but I'm so happy. So she was asked about, you know, her opponent after she won by 9 points. And she said, quote, I don't tack my constituents. Delegate Marshall is my constituent now. So good.
I strive to give that elegant of a fuck you. One
I
day
know.
In life.
Yeah. So there were a whole bunch of other firsts and great wins. So Democrat Dawn Adams became the state's first openly lesbian candidate elected to the House of Delegates.
Yeah. And Elizabeth Guzman and Hala Ayala. So they're two Democrats who also defeated incumbent Republicans. They became Virginia's first Latina delegates. And then Kathy Tran became the state's first Asian American delegate. She also beat a Republican. So there's all these
yeah.
women who are just like knocking these Republican dickwads out of office. Like literally dickwads be gone in action.
In action. I feel like they're all just like, fuck you and fuck you and
yes.
fuck you. And then I'm
yes.
going to take your seat. So we're coming for you, Paul Ryan.
Exactly. And then across the country, there were a lot of amazing firsts as well.
Yeah. In Minnesota, Andrea Jenkins became America's first openly transgender woman of color elected to public office. She was elected to Minneapolis City Council.
And just a quick note, because people were saying, going back to Danica Rome, that she was the first transgender state legislator, but she isn't the first trans person to serve in a state legislature. She's the first openly trans person. There was a woman named Althea Garrison. So she was a figure in Boston politics, and she served in the Massachusetts House of Representatives, and she was outed by other people. She didn't out herself, and that was a pretty ugly thing that happened. But just to make sure that we mention her as well. Mm-hmm.
In Montana, in Helena, they elected Wilmot Collins as mayor, in unseating Jim Smith, who had held the office since 2001. So, you know, long-term guy. And Collins and his wife, Maddie, came to the United States as refugees from Liberia in the 1990s. So they resettled in Helena, and he became Montana's first black mayor as well. He's kicking ass all over Montana. Then in Charlotte, North Carolina, Vi Lyles, she became the first black female mayor in Charlotte.
Yeah, and then in New Jersey, Hoboken elected Ravi Bala, who is the first Sikh mayor ever in the state of New Jersey.
So in Manchester, New Hampshire, Democrat Joyce Craig beat longtime Republican Mayor Ted Gatsas, becoming the first female mayor in New Hampshire's largest city, which is great.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Yeah.
And then transgender candidate Lisa Middleton was elected to the Palm Springs, California City Council, becoming the first transgender person elected to a non-judicial office in California. So yes, that's really great. And then another transgender candidate, Tyler Titus, won a seat on the school board in Erie, Pennsylvania, becoming the first transgender person elected to office in the entire state.
Yes. There were so many amazing firsts. And again, like we said, a blue fucking tidal wave. Also, sort of below the radar, Democrats picked up two Georgia seats. So Deborah Gonzalez won House District 117 with 53% of the vote. And then Jonathan Wallace won House District 119 with 56% of the vote. Both seats were sort of in the Athens area and both were vacant, hence the special elections. But not only were the two seats previously held by Republican incumbents, they were uncontested in the 2016 elections.
Yeah, that seems to be a theme, that a lot of these uncontested seats the Democrats have never bothered going for before are sort of becoming seats that are conceivably winnable.
Right.
And then Democrat Malka Dingra won Tuesday's special election to a Washington State Senate seat. And, you know, honestly, most people probably wouldn't be paying attention to this particular seat. But Dingra just cemented her party's full control of the state government.
Yeah, so that means that in Washington, Oregon, and California, Democrats have trifectas. So that means that they hold majorities in the state legislature and in the governor's mansion.
Really awesome. Completely blue coast. And then in Maine, voters decided to expand access to Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, making the state the first in the nation to settle the issue by referendum. So Maine is one of 19 states whose Republican governors or legislatures have refused to expand Medicaid. So basically they were like, we reject that, and and voted on it instead and voted to expand Medicaid.
And they're not the only state in which you can pass the Medicaid expansion by ballot initiative. So keep that in mind, because Maine was a state in which, you know, the governor, like Devin said, didn't want to expand Medicaid. And the voters were like, we're going to override your fucking veto, asshole. And they did. They did. It won pretty emphatically. And the governor is kind of refusing to implement it at this point. So it looks like it's going to be a little bit of an uphill battle to get him on fucking board and get him in line. But Maine voters did it. And I think healthcare was a big issue for a lot of people across the country.
I don't understand governors who don't cater to their constituents, right? Obviously this passed by voting. I don't understand why he's not on board. I don't get it.
It's because it's almost like they don't have their constituents' best interests at heart. That's why we're coming for their goddamn seats.
And, you know, the thing is, you know, these races were won because of the hard fucking work of volunteers and particularly get out the vote activists and efforts and Democrats at all levels. And in Virginia, 47% of registered voters turned out to vote, which is maybe sadly, but a pretty high number for these elections. And it's important to note that in the 2013 election, Terry McAuliffe got about 1 million votes and his margin was razor thin. It was about 56,000 votes. And in this election, Northam got 1.4 million votes, and that was 230,000 more votes than Gillespie. So that's a lot more people.
Yeah. And actually, one of my favorite stories from the Virginia election, there was a Huffington Post reporter who was interviewing former felons who were voting for the first time because Terry McAuliffe had restored their voting rights. And it was just, it was amazing to watch. Yeah. You know, there was people who were saying they never thought they'd have the chance to do it. It made them feel like they were full citizens, you know? And that to me is just another example of never taking your vote for granted. I mean, there was one woman who was interviewed who basically didn't have the right to vote for so long because she stole diapers for her baby. She stole diapers, you know, it's like that was enough to make it so she couldn't vote for a long time. And so that's something I think Democrats should be thinking about all across the country, not only because it's morally morally right, but it's in Democrats' self-interest as well.
Yeah, when more people turn out, Democrats tend to win. So
right, when people have voting rights, Democrats, and people turn out, Democrats tend to win, because it turns out our ideas are the better ideas in general. You know, I'm just saying.
This also has implications for gerrymandering and redistricting
in Virginia.
In Virginia, you know, we're coming up on a census year.
Yeah.
So that means they're going to be redrawing the district lines. And like I've said before in other podcasts, districting is sort of a combination of math and magic. And it's hard. It's really more complicated than it seems.
Yes.
But having a Democrat in the governor's mansion when that happens is going to be hugely beneficial moving forward.
And a more balanced, House of Delegates. Yeah, it just, that's why elections matter. Elections have consequences for everything.
Do they have motherfucking consequences?
They have motherfucking consequences. And sometimes those consequences are good, you know? Like I said, we should be holding these newly elected Democrats accountable, but it's a better position to be in than to be like fighting tooth and nail to make sure these Republican dickwads aren't trying to take everyone's rights away. You know what I mean? And trying to quote unquote rig the system, really. I mean, that's what happens with gerrymandering and certainly voter suppression.
And you know, getting more balanced legislatures also, it means that Democrats can play offense instead of defense. They don't have to constantly be trying to push back on policies that are kind of being introduced by Republicans. They have the opportunity to push forward their own agenda as well. So it's a really positive step forward.
Yeah. And I will say that, you know, this sort of, you know, massive win by Democrats, the state wasn't gerrymandered half to death, we'd have way more seats in the House of Delegates than they do now. Elections matter.
A lot of people say that fall is their favorite season, and I really like it too, but it's really busy for me, you know, prepping for the holidays. And one thing that's been making my life easier, Sarah, is a meal delivery kit from Sunbasket.
You know, I love Sunbasket. I've talked about this several times on the podcast, but I honestly always look forward to their deliveries on Mondays. Like it feels, and I'm Jewish, but it feels like Christmas every Monday.
Yeah, I mean, I love that I don't have to go to the grocery store. I think we all know how we feel about the grocery store.
I know how you feel about the grocery store. That's for sure.
I hate it. So, you know, Sunbasket sends you all the ingredients you need in these perfectly portioned, you know, little bags.
Yes.
It's perfect.
It's totally true. And the thing that I love is that I have so much fun making and sharing meals with Nick. Like it's kind of this shared activity that's really nice.
Oh, yeah.
And actually my mom, so #Laura, has started getting Sunbasket meals. And so we have a really fun time like comparing meals. Like she talks about like she'll get some of the side dishes. Like Nick and I like to get the meat dishes. She'll get like vegetarian or vegan. Yeah, it's great. It's like a family affair.
I know, you're making me want to call #Laura and compare my meals with hers.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you've already got her Bitmoji mug, so, like, that's the next
step. That's
true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you go to sunbasket.com/hellbent today, you can get $35 off your first order. That's sunbasket.com/hellbent for $35 off. sunbasket.com/hellbent.
Imani Gandhi is the senior legal analyst at Rewire News and the co-host of Rewire's new podcast, Boom Lawyered. She is an award-winning journalist and lawyer whose insight, humor, and incisive analysis make her one of my favorite women to follow on Twitter. We are so lucky to have her on the show. Welcome, Imani.
Oh, I feel so good to be here. Thank you.
Yeah,
that was a nice introduction.
You know, today marks sort of 1 year since the 2016 election and is a couple days after the huge Democratic wins in the elections that happened on Tuesday. So how are you feeling about that? Like, how are you feeling since last year's election and now?
Well, I definitely, for the first time, feel hopeful in about a year.
Yeah.
This past year has been alternatively the longest year ever. And not long enough.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's like, I can't believe we still have 3 more years of this, but I am appreciative that the denigration of identity politics and people talking about stuff like, oh, well, you shouldn't run on trans issues and you shouldn't run on abortion and all of that nonsense. I'm glad that that seems to have been, we can put that to bed.
Right.
Because, you know, Danica Rome won. There are two other trans people of color, I believe, who won seats on the Minnesota, on the St. Paul Aldermen's Council or something like that. So it just seems to me there was actually a special election in Iowa a few months ago where a person ran against someone who supported trans rights by calling them, you know, supporting putting boys in girls' bathrooms and all of that nonsense. And that person lost too. So it seems to me like these sort of quote unquote cultural issues, which I just refer to as issues because they're issues that affect most people who aren't white, cis, hetero men, you know, it seems to me that those issues are becoming less of a focal point when it comes to voting and just more of a, this is just how it is. We have trans people and trans people are now elected to office. That's the way it is now.
Right. Well, then especially with like Danica Rome, she won against a 13-term incumbent who intentionally misgendered her in his mailings. So it's just sort of like a big fuck you to the whole thing.
And I love that. I really do love that. Yeah.
So why do you think that Democrats had such huge gains in this election?
I definitely think the fact that Virginia was, you know, Charlottesville is in Virginia. And I definitely think that that sort of mobilized Virginians. I mean, it's disappointing to see that still half of white women are not doing their job. Hello, white ladies out there. Stop fucking it up.
Exactly.
Once again, black women sort of carried Northam to victory. And it seems to me, at least from my interactions with people on Twitter, it seems to me that more and more people are starting to realize that literally black women tried to save everyone's asses last year and it didn't work because there's just not enough of us.
Right.
You know, but we need people to follow our lead. I really think that that's sort of the future. We need to follow the lead of LGBT people, of trans people, of women of color. And we need to just get white dudes out of the paint.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, absolutely.
Just hetero white dudes anyway. It's enough of them writing these op-eds about how Democrats have to abandon abortion and how Democrats have to not push bathroom equality down people's throats and yada, yada, yada. And none of that turned out to be true. So that's fantastic.
Yeah. The least favorite type of hot take is from cishet white men saying we need to drop, quote, identity politics.
Right.
Like, please spare me.
Exactly. Because, you know, I say this all the time on Twitter, all politics is identity politics. Right. It's just that the white identity is seen as the default identity. So it's just called politics.
Right.
You know,
right.
Everything else is some kind of other form of politics. But regular politics is just white male identity, cis hetero white male identity politics. And so people who rail against identity politics or who feel like they've been cut out of, you know, certain conversations, for example, I don't know if you recall back in the Women's March where Jonathan Chait started complaining that he felt unwelcome at the Women's March.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Seriously.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand what goes through your head where you're sitting there and you're watching all of these people, not just women, people mobilizing, and you're thinking, oh man, the women didn't send me a personal gilded invitation. It's just frustrating. But I think that, I certainly think that Tuesday was a backlash against Trump and against white supremacy. I think it's sad that it took it took the death of Heather Heyer and it took literal Nazis marching in the street before people started to actually realize, hey, wait, maybe white supremacy is a problem. And maybe, you know, racism does still exist despite the fact that we had a president for 8 years who was black and we're supposed to be post-racial. So I think that people are starting to wake up. I hope that people are starting to realize that there are some sections, I mean, what Hillary Clinton called deplorables, there are some sections of this country who cannot be reasoned with. And so I think it is incumbent upon us to just try and reach the people who can be reasoned with, i.e. independents, people who didn't vote. And we need to get actual people who can vote to the polls so they're allowed to vote. And we need to just forget this 30% or whomever who would literally praise Trump as he's burning their house down, you know?
You know, you've talked a lot about reproductive rights in the Trump era. And so what is the most shocking policy that the Trump administration or the GOP has tried to enact thus far in terms of reproductive rights?
I think that the most shocking is their ongoing effort to make sure that pregnant immigrant minors are not allowed to have abortions. Yeah. I think what happened with the Jane Doe case is appalling. I think it's ridiculous that a government is basically holding a 17-year-old girl was holding her hostage because the head of the Office of Refugee Resettlement is like this huge anti-choicer. His name is Scott Lloyd.
Yeah.
And he is the gnarliest anti-choicer out there. And so he really believes that it is his job to ensure that no people, no minors that pass through his, you know, pass on his radar get abortions, to the point where the DOJ is now has filed a petition with the Supreme Court, not only asking that there be a policy saying that immigrant minors cannot avail themselves of due process and all of that, but also asking for the court to sanction the lawyers for, quote unquote, hurrying. I mean, they didn't quote this, but for basically hurrying this woman, this girl, into an abortion before the DOJ had a chance to appeal it or block it. I mean, it's like she was 15 weeks pregnant. She had 5 more weeks to get the abortion before she would have had to go to another state because Texas doesn't do abortions past 20 weeks. So the fact that we're using young women as political footballs, I think that is probably what has horrified me the most.
Yeah. I mean, they tried to run the clock out on her. Like,
And it's absurd.
It's absurd.
Ridiculous. What's weird to me is that, you know, as much as the GOP hates immigrants, they seem to hate women's rights more.
Seriously.
Right? Because essentially, if this woman had given birth to this child, that child would have been an American citizen. And they don't like that, the quote unquote anchor babies.
Right.
So they hate abortion. They hate women's reproductive autonomy more than they hate immigrants, which I think is kind of fascinating.
Yeah, it kind of speaks to like what's going on up there in their heads, right?
Right. You know, and the idea that we're going to force teenage girls or women or anybody to give birth and then say, oh, well, you can give them up for adoption. And then now what they've done, they've just, their new tax plan removed the adoption tax credit.
Yep.
I mean, it's like they're so invested in the fetus. And then once the fetus comes out, it's like, all right, we did our job. We got that kid out. Now go raise him. No safety net, no food assistance, no child care assistance. Just good luck. It's my feeling.
There's also been debates on a bill in the House that would potentially ban abortions after something like 6 weeks. I mean,
yeah,
you know, they're saying it has no chance of passing, but do you think just introducing bills like this have an effect?
Yeah, I mean, part of my job at Rewire is tracking these bills. I've been doing it for about 4 years, and they introduce the same bills over and over and over. With the heartbeat ban, this is the first time there's been a federal level heartbeat ban. And I think the federal government is trying to do with the 6 week ban, the heartbeat ban, the same thing that Kasich did in Ohio, which was the Ohio legislature introduced a 20 week ban. Everyone freaked out. Oh, it's unconstitutional. We can't, you know, ban abortion. No, it's, you know, the only people who are getting abortions after 20 weeks are people who found out that the fetus had some problem. Everyone's losing their minds, right? And so then the Ohio legislature introduces the heartbeat ban, the 6 week ban, and everyone loses their mind even further because obviously most people don't even know they're pregnant at 6 weeks. So it's preposterous. And so then Kasich vetoes the 6 week ban, but then signs the 20 week ban. And that's supposed to make Republicans seem reasonable, right? Because, okay, we know that the 6 week ban was a little bit much, but how about this 20 week ban? Doesn't that work well?
Right.
And the answer is no, because that's unconstitutional too. So
right.
I think they're playing games. I think that, you know, for example, I think every year the same handful of senators introduced four separate personhood bills, the Sanctity of Human Life Act, year after year. I'm talking about like for a decade, and it's never passed. Now we have an administration where that seems like more of an option. They're putting personhood language into the tax code, for God's sake. So we're in uncharted territory here, and it sucks.
Yeah.
that's my analysis. It sucks.
My official analysis. This blows.
Yeah.
Yeah, and kind of from a legal perspective, I mean, Roe v. Wade is still in effect, and all of these bills, you know, said they were unconstitutional. Do you think that that will be kind of a stopgap going forward? Do you think that this could go to the Supreme Court?
I think the real issue that Supreme Court is going to be looking at when it comes to abortion cases in the future is not Roe v. Wade so much, but Planned Parenthood versus Casey, because that's the case where the court said, you know, you can't put a substantial obstacle or an undue burden in the place of a woman or a person who's seeking abortion, right? So a lot of the newer cases, for example, Whole Woman's Healthy Hellerstedt, which was about those Texas regulations, the trap laws, the admitting privileges, and the ambulatory surgical requirement, which requires abortion clinics to retrofit as hospitals, basically outpatient surgery, surgical hospitals, those were found to be an undue burden. And so all of the states that have laws similar to those are getting vetoed by court. So I think the issue is going to become, how much of a burden can they place between a woman or a person and an abortion? How far can they take that line, and how far are courts willing to let them take that line? Because the court has said in Roe v. Wade and in Casey that states have an interest in potential life. So states are allowed to sort of finagle and do what they can to sort of vindicate that interest in potential life, but that interest only kicks in at the point of fetal viability, which is about 24 weeks. So anything before 24 weeks is going to be unconstitutional. Now, the game being played right now by these anti-choicers and junk scientists is to roll back viability, right? So if they find a fetus that can survive at 20 weeks, find another fetus that can survive at 20 weeks, and all of a sudden, all fetuses are viable at 20 weeks and we can ban abortion. That's what they're trying to do, even though viability is something that doctors have to determine on a case-by-case basis. But if they can come up with enough junk studies that say fetuses can live at 20 weeks, then the 20-week ban no longer is unconstitutional.
Right. Right. That makes sense. That's how that works. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. That's absolutely terrifying.
Yeah. It's terrifying. And I don't think that most anti-choicers really care that much about reversing Roe v. Wade, because they just want to make it so toothless that it's nearly impossible to access an abortion. And that's just the same as it being illegal. So yeah. Reducing access, illegality, you know, there's slippery paths that kind of converge on one another.
Yeah. And I think that there's a lot of intersectionality here too, because, you know, if they make it very difficult to get an abortion, but, you know, maybe not impossible, I feel like the richer you are, the more privileged you are, the more likely you are to be able to access those services. So it really becomes not just about women's rights, but these sort of intersectional rights in general.
Absolutely. And that's already the case now, you know, right. For example, with the Hyde Amendment that prohibits taxpayer dollars from being used to fund abortion, that is basically just discrimination in the delivery of healthcare services, discrimination against poor people who tend to be women of color, people of color. So that already happened. But certainly, you know, if abortion is criminalized or if it is whittled down to where there are, you know, one clinic per state, then yes, absolutely. How much money you have, how much time you can take off from work, whether you're a wage earner or a salary earner, all plays into whether or not you're going to be able to access an abortion. So, yeah, I mean, they're really good at sort of getting at abortion inaccessibility, but without outright attacking Roe versus Wade. I think that a lot of people have given up on that approach and are approaching it from, well, what kind of regulations can we pass that will slip through the cracks? For example, I'll give you an example. In Missouri, they already have a 72-hour waiting period. So that's fine. This year, they tried to add a quote-unquote same physician requirement. So in Missouri, in order to get an abortion, you have to be counseled and told a bunch of crap, like basically state-mandated crap that includes nonsense about, you know, abortions causing breast cancer and causing suicide and yada yada. So not only do you have to go through that forced counseling and wait 72 hours, but the person who is performing the abortion actually has to be your counselor. So that means abortion providers, who are already overworked, have to spend time doing the actual counseling as opposed to what the law used to be, which was a qualified professional. And, you know, when you go to the doctors, oftentimes you don't actually see a doctor. You see a qualified professional.
Right.
So they're, you know, they're doing these little things to just sort of make it so that there's just not enough abortion providers available to provide all the abortions that people need.
So like you said, it's more about placing these roadblocks and try to strategically work around, you know, what's already in place. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
So
right.
I think you know, me and my advocates for reproductive rights and justice need to talk about it differently. And I think we need to stop being so afraid to say the word, to talk about it, because it's not as taboo as people think it is. It's just that the loud people seem to be winning.
Right, right. That makes perfect sense. Sort of a forest versus the trees argument here, right? Like looking at one piece, maybe it's fine, but taking it all together and you're like, this is ridiculous. This is literal bullshit. This is a dumpster fire.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So at the end of every episode, Sarah and I like to do a gratitude check. So we kind of take stock of the good things going on in this dumpster fire. So what is something that you're grateful for today? And it could be big or small, personal, political, you know, anything that you're grateful for.
I mean, I'm definitely grateful for the elections on Tuesday. I'm grateful that I finally feel a glimmer of hope. And it's the first glimmer of hope in a long time. And I'm grateful that I got through the year, frankly, and still have the energy to do this work.
Right.
It gets exhausting.
Yeah.
But, you know, I love it. I love my job. I love working to help people. I love abortion.
I love abortion. I get it. I totally get it.
I do. I mean, like, you know, you need an abortion, don't get an abortion. What's the big fucking deal? The administration, most Republicans are intent on making it a big deal because they're beholden to the religious right, and the religious right thinks it's a big deal. So there we are.
I always wonder, like I barely have enough energy to like deal with my own life and my own issues. Like, I do not want to deal with someone else's issues.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to be involved in that. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't understand how someone being in a same-sex relationship affects me, how someone being trans affects me, right. As long as something you're doing doesn't hurt people, go for it.
Yeah, what do I care?
I don't give a shit.
Right, exactly. Like I said, I can barely do it with my own fucking life.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you so much, Imani, for coming on the show today. You can follow her on Twitter at Angry Black Lady, and you can listen to her new podcast, Boom Lawyered, on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you. Thank you. And thanks for having me. It was really fun chatting with you.
It was great. Thank you. Every day, millions of people go online to search for local businesses or, you know, podcasts. So does your small business or podcast show up? When you create a website on WordPress.com, you make it easier for your customers to find you, to connect with you, to hear how you can help them. And so your business or podcast needs an online home. It needs a WordPress.com website.
Yes, indeed it does. And actually, WordPress.com hosts HellbentPodcast.com, as you sort of alluded to, Devin. It's been fucking awesome.
And you know what's great, Sarah? All WordPress.com plans include a custom domain name for the life of the plan.
Ooh.
And so I've actually come up with some more custom domain names for us. So would you like to hear that?
Oh my God. What, Devin?
You're going to love these. Carter Page is a Nimrod.com. Mike Flynn is Dunzo.com.
Yes.
And this shit is bananas.com.
We should probably make sure those aren't already taken, though, you know?
Yeah, we probably should. But if they are, there's like a kick-ass customer support team at WordPress.com to talk to if we run into any issues. I don't know if they could help us get Mike Flynn is Dunzo.com, but I bet they'd try.
Yes. I mean, they are, the only people working harder than Robert Mueller right now.
So you should get started today with a 15% off any new plan purchase. Go to WordPress.com/hellbent to create your website and find the plan that's right for you. That's WordPress.com/hellbent for 15% off your brand new website and custom domain name. WordPress.com/hellbent. Okay, Sarah, it was so great talking to Imani. She is so smart. It was such a pleasure to talk to her. So let's get into our gratitude checks. So Sarah, what are you grateful for?
So I have a healthcare-related gratitude check, and it feels appropriate because, you know, sort of like we talked about in the elections section, you know, healthcare was big on voters' minds. If you look at the exit polls in the Virginia governor's race, the people who said healthcare was their main issue or their number one issue, 78% of them voted for Ralph Northam.
Wow.
And obviously, yeah. Obviously, we saw, you know, in Maine, they expanded Medicaid by ballot initiative. So voters are like, fuck you, Republicans trying to fuck with my healthcare. Like, get the fuck out of here. So my gratitude check is actually related to Obamacare signups. So a record number of people have signed up for ACA in the first few days of open enrollment. And that's a bigger number this year compared to the same period in previous years. And that's pretty remarkable, especially considering that, you know, since the Republicans and Trump were unsuccessful in repealing ACA, you know, the Trump administration has really tried to sabotage Obamacare.
Yeah, didn't they cut the budget for outreach by like 90%?
Yeah, they cut the ad budget by 90%, and then they cut outreach efforts as well that help people sign up. So just to give you some stats behind this. So on the first day of enrollment alone, so that was November 1st, more than 200,000 people selected a plan for 2018, and that's compared to about 100,000 last year. So wow. That's pretty incredible. You know, these sort of counter efforts to combat Trump administration sabotage is working. And it's kind of remarkable thinking how much better it could be working if we had a government that fucking cared about people getting healthcare and, you know, wasn't trying to get people not to get fucking healthcare. Yeah, and actually more than a million people visited healthcare.gov on November 1st, and that was compared to about 750,000 in the previous year. So
wow, that's a lot of people.
People, yeah, healthcare matters. You know, yeah. Healthcare is a big issue for citizens and for voters. And, you know, I think Republicans are seeing not only in these elections, but also in these sign-up efforts, that their efforts to repeal Obamacare is probably going to fucking backfire on them.
Good. That makes me really fucking happy.
I know. Me too. Okay. So Devin, what are you grateful for today?
Okay. So for this one, I'm getting a little personal.
Ooh, I like it.
Yeah, I know. Just because I had like such like a personal like moment the other day. So on Monday's episode, I like offhandedly mentioned that I read Law & Order SVU fan fiction, which is totally true.
She wasn't kidding.
I wasn't kidding. And I had a whole discussion about it on our fan group on Facebook, Dickwads Be Gone. And people were just like, oh my God, that's so cool. I read it too. What are your ships? Like all these great. It's great.
I love that. Like this like subgenre on the Hellbent Facebook group.
I know.
SVU or Law & Order fan fiction.
Yeah, totally. So, but the thing is I've been reading fan fiction for a long time, like all sorts of fandoms all over the place. I mean, it kind of plays into like my comic book, like my love of comic books and storytelling.
Yeah.
You know, I'm also a big reader. Like it makes sense. But for a long time, I was so afraid to tell people that. I just thought I would be so judged. I thought, you know, people were going to think I was weird. I was one of the like weird people who like reads fan fiction and I don't know, there was like such a stigma, at least in my own mind, there was such a stigma around it, and I was so afraid of it. And that was my deepest, darkest secret for a long time, was that I read fan fiction. I told nobody. I mean, even my husband didn't know for a long time.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know, it was this thing in my head, and I couldn't talk about it. And being able to like say that to a lot of people and then have such a positive reaction was really like a moment for me.
Yeah.
And feeling like I really fit in with the community. And on top of that, and I'm going to relate it back to politics, which is weird, so stick with me here.
No, I think there's always a way back to politics. I mean, exactly. I find ways to relate The Real Housewives back to politics all the time, you know? Like I turned off that Trump speech the other day and watched The Real Housewives of Dallas reunion because I found that they were more coherent and diplomatic than the current president of the United States.
Right. So there you go. So, but the thing is, I think I'm only willing to tell people that and to like kind of like remove the stigma and shame that I feel about it because I'm so much more empowered now. And I feel like the fiercest version of myself, where before it was like, oh, people are going to think I'm weird and they're not going to like me. And now I'm like, fuck you. I don't care if you like me. Like,
yes.
You know, and so that just that sort of realization and that feeling is something that I've always wanted. And then all of a sudden I had it, and it was just really overwhelming. And especially in tandem with this big win for Democrats, this blue fucking tidal wave that's just coming in, and comparing it to the kind of despair I felt a year ago.
Yeah.
I just like how much my life has changed in a year is just almost inconceivable.
Yeah.
And so I'm really grateful for this community, and that I get to do this every day, and the fact that I basically tell people to go fuck off for a living. And
yes. A girl can dream. Just telling men to fuck off all the time. It's great.
I know.
10 out of 10 doctors would recommend.
Doctors recommend. None of this 4 out of 5 bullshit.
Not 4 out of 5. It's 10 out of 10. I mean, listen, you know, the matriarchy, it's coming and y'all better get ready, you know?
Get ready for it. Yeah. And so I'm just grateful for all these wonderful people in my life, especially these wonderful women that I've gotten to meet. Sarah, of course, you. I talk about this all the time, but I'm so grateful for Sarah.
Aww.
And I know the support that, you know, you give me and the fact that we work so well together, even when it's hard, even when we don't agree on what stories we should cover, you know, we're always like willing to listen and have each other's back. So
That
just has really come full like circle for me this week. And it's something that I really wanted to talk about because I feel really good.
I love that. I know. And I will say that, you know, there are like cynical people on Twitter who are like, you know, telling fellow Democrats like, oh, we shouldn't be celebrating too much, like get back to work. And like, listen, like no one's trying to like rest on anyone's laurels here. But I think when this year has just been such an onslaught of bullshit, we should celebrate the good
just
shit
a little bit. Right.
We
like,
should.
It's okay.
Absolutely. It's okay to celebrate it because that's what's going to fuel you for the fight to come. And yeah. So, yeah, I'm not for people saying don't celebrate too much. I'm like, celebrate your heart out and then you can get back to work. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
exactly. Because you can only fuel yourself with like rage for so long. Sarah might disagree with me.
I know. Here. I'm like a fucking like Prius of rage. You know what I mean? Like
I just convert rage into energy.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, we don't need gasoline or electric, you know? It's just rage.
You know, but it's also important to fuel yourself with the wins and the positive things. So I say celebrate and celebrate being your best selves.
All right, Devin. So today has been just a overwhelmingly positive podcast, which, like we said, is just a
new for us.
strange feeling in 2017. But we have our Hellion of the Week, and we have a great story here. So we're going to keep the sort of good times rolling. So who is our Hellion of the Week, Devin?
Well, we'd really like to give it to all of the badass women who ran for office and then ultimately won. I mean, 40% of candidates who ran with Run for Something, who were trained by Run for Something, won. That's opposed to about 10% of first-time candidates that usually win.
Yeah, and I think that the win rate, I think I saw from Amanda Littman, who is one of the founders of Run for Something, she said they're inching closer to 50%, which is just remarkable. And yeah, exactly. And even if you're a woman who ran and didn't win, like, kudos to fucking you. You know
Fuck
what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, get back up, try again. We believe in you.
So definitely all the women who ran, but we'd like to highlight one woman in particular, because this felt like very hellion behavior.
Oh my gosh. If you looked up hellion in the dictionary, and we have, Merriam-Webster has schooled us on the sort of origins of hellion. But I think that this story would be right next to the definition of hellion. It's so good.
Absolutely. So the winner, like sort of winner here is a woman named Ashley Bennett. And this woman's story is my new sexual identity.
It's so good. Like,
it's so good.
Yeah. Mine used to be Jason Chaffetz getting yelled at by constituents. Now it's this story. Mm-hmm.
John Carman. Let's back it up a little bit and give you a little bit of background here. John Carman was a Republican member of the Atlantic County Board of Chosen Freeholders, which is a legislative body in New Jersey. He posted a meme on his Facebook page in January making fun of the Women's March. He posted a picture of the Women's March, and the caption was, "Will the women's protest be over in time for one of them to cook dinner?"
For them to cook dinner.
For them to cook dinner.
For all of us. We've got to... First of all, here's what offends me about this. It's not even creative.
Like, right?
If
boring.
You're gonna be
boring
a misogynistic
sexism.
Asshole, be creative. Like, this right? is the most boring, yawn-worthy shit I've ever heard, you
right,
know?
Like, make me a sandwich? Like, that's such a terrible joke.
Like, it's just so cliche. Like, yeah. You know, it's just, like, yawn. Boring.
Exactly. So in response, dozens of women showed up to a freeholder meeting to confront Carmen, and one even brought like a box of macaroni and cheese and was like, "Here, make your own dinner."
Yes.
It was good.
That's amazing.
And then Carmen refused to apologize. He just would not apologize. Ashley Bennett was one of the women who protested at Carmen's office after he posted that horrible joke. By horrible, I just mean not funny. And so she was so pissed that she decided to run against him and then kicked his ass all over New Jersey.
Technically not all over New Jersey.
Okay, fine.
Because it's a local office, but she kicked his ass.
All over that local office's district. Boy, bye.
She
beat him by 7 points, which is a big margin.
I tweeted this story and I said, "Men, piss us off at your own goddamn cost. I mean, like, we will replace you." I mean, that is absolutely true. We're coming for your jobs and we will replace you.
Yeah, we are absolutely the angry feminist bitches that your father warned you about.
Okay, Devin, so let's get into our action items today. So we've got a few different things that our hellions can do after they listen to the show.
Yes. So the first one is that you can donate or volunteer to the Doug Jones campaign in Alabama. He's running for the open Senate seat there. He's the Democrat running So polling has been kind of all over the place with this race, but it's still worth looking into and donating and volunteering. The next one is Get Covered. We, Sarah talked about this in her gratitude check, but open enrollment ends December 15th. GetAmericaCovered.org is a great resource for this. So tell your friends, get yourself covered. You know, let's make Trump's efforts to sabotage this backfire all over the place.
And that would be Obamacare ACA.
And then the last one is a little more existential than we usually go with action items, but sort of on the heels of this win, we want to keep this momentum going. So we want you to think and find one way that you can help elect a Democratic majority in 2018, and then do it. And you know, if you want to, like, share it online, like at the Hellbent Facebook group, or just share with your friends and family, you know, really keep yourself accountable. I have a couple of suggestions for you. You can donate. I personally don't make a monthly donation to Planned Parenthood in Mike Pence's name because I'm a petty ass bitch and it makes me feel better.
I love it.
You can volunteer, run for office, start an indivisible group, start a discussion in your community or office, you know, empower yourself, do the research, know the issues and take a stand, yell at your racist uncle or send Paul Ryan pictures of his missing in action spine, you know, whatever makes you feel better.
I will also say too, joining a local Democratic club.
Yes.
Is great.
Those are great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those are just the tip of the iceberg. But, you know, if you have other suggestions and ideas, definitely let us know and definitely think those through. Because, yeah, there's still a lot of work to be done. And I think these elections that happen on Tuesday can really propel us to 2018.
Sarah, this is our fucking podcast and we've been ending. Oh, yeah.
Oh, good.
So we've been ending our shows with a quote from a badass feminist woman. So today we have two quotes for you because it's our fucking podcast. And they are both from Hillary Rodham Clinton. She wrote a letter to her teenage self in Teen Vogue just recently.
It was a
very powerful piece. And so we're going to read both of them.
Because it's our goddamn podcast.
Exactly. She said, quote, "There's a lesson there for you. Take risks and don't be afraid to get caught trying. Do your best to embrace the excitement that comes with not knowing what's next. And remember that confidence and an open mind will always serve you better than insecurity and doubt. And the next time someone raises her hand in class or at work or a community meeting or a bar," that's me, I added that, "and says something really smart, go up to her afterward and introduce yourself. You'll be glad you did."
Mm.
So I love that. I loved that one.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of what Lauren Duca said in her interview on Hellbent, where she was like, journalists, especially female journalists, get so many shitty emails, like harassing, abusive emails. Like, if you appreciate our work, it means the world to tell us that you do. And I think that's especially true for women and just like not even just female journalists, but like women in your life. Tell them that they're doing something that means something to you or that's impactful. Like, that goes a long way for sure.
It really does. And then the next one is, take criticism seriously, but not personally. There will be people who want nothing more than to see you fail, but you can't let them scare you. Live your life on your terms, not theirs. You'll be reminded over and over again that you are, quote, flawed, a word you will come to loathe. But years from now, you'll come back to Wellesley on commencement day. The student speaker, the daughter of Syrian immigrants, will stand in front of her class, just as you once stood in front of yours, and insist on the beauty of imperfection. Quote, flaws show authenticity and character, she'll say. Let yourself be flawed. And it's hard to think of better advice than that.
Yes, I love that. Because, like, women are held to such an impossible standard.
Yeah.
And it's like, our flaws are used against us in ways that they aren't used against men. And it's true. Like, flaws are an indication of character and authenticity. And that's something that I really want to see is women not only embrace their three-dimensionality, but the world not drag us down because of it.
But yeah, so, you know, really positive show today. Thank you so much for being here with us on this journey this past year. And we will see you back here on Monday. For more information on today's episodes, including links to the articles we discussed and additional resources, you can visit us online at hellbentpodcast.com.
And you can follow us across social media platforms. We're at Hellbent Pod on Twitter and Instagram. We're Hellbent Podcast on Facebook. And if you want to join our Facebook group, we are facebook.com/groups/dickwadsbegone. You can also follow myself, Sarah Lerner, on Twitter at Sarah Lerner. And you can also follow Devin on Twitter at Devin Handy.
We also have a Patreon if you would like to support us that way.
Yes, and you can find us on patreon.com/hellbentpodcast, and your support would mean a lot. Thank you.